Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey everyone, Trevor Dice with Uplift Uganda. Been back in America for a month now, and I'm here with Kenny Mears, producer and editor of the show, so we can have a final interview style recording discussing what we learned, what the plans are going forward, and kind of wrap it all up in a nice little bow.
Yeah, this should be good. So I have arranged a few questions here. So obviously, after your time in Uganda, you've kind of had some time to think more about what kind of business strategies, what business ideas there are. So kind of what idea are you leaning towards now, and how has that kind of evolved since you headed out to Uganda?
For sure. So I have short-term goals and long-term goals. Short-term, first thing I want to do, and as I've discussed in other episodes, is to do the trading to bring in wireless chargers from China to Uganda. I have everything lined up for that. I just need a little bit more capital to be able to send one of those through as a test one. So that one will just be a first one. And even if it ends up flopping financially, it will still be a valuable lesson in the transportation, the logistics of the actual on the ground. How do you get something from here to there, right? From X to Y, right? So that'll be a very... I think it'll be a good experience. I'm going to do that as soon as possible before the year's over. That should be in motion. So that's a short-term one. Other short-term one is looking into saving money or finding investors for business plans that are already in place there. All they need is the capital. They have presented business plans. I've looked over them. I've seen the area. I've also done my own research. It's like, okay, this looks valid. Looks like this would work. So I need to work on developing systems that can guarantee not just running off trust, but also have safeguards in place to make sure the money's used the way that's supposed to be used, but to be almost an angel investor or seed investor and get them the money and let that capital grow. So those are short-term goals where you're helping either another business or you're doing a one-time thing. If it works, you gain the experience. If it doesn't work, well, you still gain the experience. And that's the main goal of it, right? And there might be a little bit of profit on the side, but that's not guaranteed. Long-term, though, is to look into getting into the bigger fields, specifically, as I talked a lot about, is probably auto or other fields that do involve transportation of goods, but with a shop there in at place and location.
So. Okay. So what are kind of some of these businesses you would be investing in, right? Not you just starting it from fresh.
Yeah. So the main ones are based on food. Mostly dry goods or wholesale. Wholesale is something that it's one of those almost sure bets, right? If you have the capital to start a wholesale, do it because it will work, you know. In varying locations, it may not be as profitable as others, but the chance of it not succeeding is very low because there's not that many wholesales. And so people like to buy food in bulk. It saves some money, you know. There's no Sam's Club over there. So if you build a wholesale, there's a big chance that it can work. And so in different locations and with different groups of people, that's the main one I've looked at is wholesale. Sometimes starting from a smaller food shop and then saving a certain percentage of the profits to become a wholesale a year or two down the road. So
food, I mean, everybody needs food, right? Mm-hmm. So that totally makes sense. That would be a fairly sure thing.
Yeah.
So what are kind of the big logistical hurdles for, importing things like, you mentioned like wireless chargers or auto parts or that sort of thing. And how do you think you're going to be able to kind of overcome those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to be, when I first went there, I was like, okay, I live in America and I know Uganda. Let's ship things from America to Uganda. And that's kind of changed because that makes it very expensive. So then I'd have to be tailoring to the wealthy class of people, which would be a very different, like it's a different approach than what I'm looking at. And so what I need to use is the established shipping lanes. And that is China, India, and Dubai. Those are the three main countries that trade to Uganda. Mm-hmm. So for auto parts, it's usually from even Japanese cars. They usually get it from Dubai. Not exactly sure how that works, but that is how it works. And then along with that, so following the shipping lanes that are already established, so I've been talking with different Chinese companies about getting the bulk sale of wireless chargers and things. And some of them have outright refused, saying, we don't have any familiarity with shipping there. We're used to shipping to other places, even South America, but not to Africa. So they've just said, we're not even going to try. Huh. Others already have, they're like, yeah, we could throw it on with our next shipment of stuff. We haven't sent that. But we could, if you pay for it, we can add it to shipment that we already have going there. It'd take 3 to 5 days, right? So it depends on the company I'm working with. There are established shipping lanes, but the ones that I wanted the most aren't established there. So the ones that are more expensive was the one that I mentioned that already had established shipping lane there. And that's why they haven't brought it there, because that one costing more would make it not as worth bringing it there,
Yeah, interesting. So, you've talked a bit about there's, two kind of markets. There's the richer end of Uganda, and then there's the more average, poorer end. So how could you create a business that could cater to possibly both of those, right? And max market there? Like what are your thoughts there?
Mm-hmm. If you're trying to aim for both of them, that's a very interesting business. Food would be your only option, and the type of food you chose would either be the local cheap food, the rice and beans and posho, or you're going in the Motoki, or you're going to expensive, pizzas and burgers and fancy food, fancier food than that, right? It'd be pretty hard to do both of them in the same business in most situations. But I think it'd be wiser to have different businesses applying to both, if that makes sense. So you have the food and the auto is definitely for the rich.
Yeah.
But the food will be for everyone, as we discussed, as you commented.
Okay. Cool. So how have your conversations with owners of businesses and those types, how has that shifted or shaped your plans that you're kind of looking to implement?
Yeah. So I've talked to a lot of people in a lot of different ways and a lot of different fields. There's a lot of possibility there and a lot of potential there if you know what you're doing. And the ones I talk to are the ones that know what they're doing, right?
Right.
And I'm the person asking questions because I don't know what I'm doing. So it would definitely be a learning curve in any of these. And the ones I talked to, that lasted over 10 plus years, that's because they'd figured it out step at a time. And so they would talk about the people who had failed, right? Who had just jumped in or didn't work out, and what they did different. And so that allowed me a chance to see the cautions, and to be, prepared, like, okay, so don't do this, don't do that. Yeah. Give me some if this happens, this will probably happen after it. So make sure this doesn't happen. So there was a lot of okay, we've got to take that into account. Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of vague. Is there a specific field that I can talk about? Let me think about it. We might circle back to that.
Yeah. So kind of a little bit. Right. You're talking about you want to do a test shipment, mm-hmm. hopefully before the end of the year, we've got 4 months left. So mm-hmm. plenty of time to do that. So what criteria are you going to use to measure the success of your little tests that you might try as you're kind of feeling out how to run this?
For sure. So I have, Obviously, the first one will result in the results would be if it turned a profit, and if so, what the profit was like. Now, for a one-time shipment like this, the next question will be how fast until they're asking for another shipment.
Yeah.
And so if it takes, you know, a year, I'll be like, okay, not a very hot business, you know. At least they ask for one after a year. Like, if they never ask for one, well, then, you know, that was obviously a fail. But if they ask for it, and then, and if they ask for one soon after, then... let's say it happened six months after, that's probably close enough that they need a new shipment. That's worth sending another shipment in and contacting my other people in other cities and branching out. Because if it worked in one place, it should probably work in others. Even though we're starting a capital city, it's going to have the most people interested in this sort of stuff. There are plenty of other cities there that we could find, just like we did in Kampala. And I brought them with me on this process. I showed them what I did. They're with me so they could do the same thing in their cities independently. So they're on standby. If it's good to go, they'll go find the people and we'll replicate it.
Interesting. Sounds like a pretty good pilot program kind of plan there. So kind of shifting from the practicalities of the trip, you know, going into this, you said that your trip out to Uganda was just as much for yourself as it was for helping the lovely people of Uganda. So what's the most significant personal change or realization you've had during your trip there and the aftermath there?
It's a great question. I have a lot of thoughts. But to pare it down, so when I went back, I wasn't sure if I was, you know, it's one thing to be somewhere when you're sent there on a mission, and whether you were there for, you know, religious purposes or humanitarian purposes, usually you go with a group of people that, you know, are also from where you're from. You're spending time with them, you're working with them. And so it adds a little difference to things. Whereas this time I went and I was just, when they offered me an extra mattress, I was taking it. They'd lay it out on the floor where they usually, you know, eat and cook food and everything, put the mattress there instead. I sleep on the mattress and then I was living with them. And I wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
Because we are very spoiled here in America.
Absolutely.
And we do need it. We do have colder winters and like we do need better insulated houses. It is nice to have hot water, like especially in the winter.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like it's nice to have AC in the summer. There's a lot of things that we take for granted, but that I really did miss when I was there. But by the time I came back, I realized I didn't actually need any of those. So that was a big shift for me, because after like 2 weeks, I'm like, man, I don't want to live like this.
Yeah.
I want to go back to my spoiled American, comfortable everything. But I found that I could actually, and I would enjoy living there, even if I was just there, not on a religious purpose. Now, whether I will or not, the cards have not been played.
Yeah.
We'll see. And then, but that I could is what I learned, right? And that I could be there. It wasn't just that I was there on a specific purpose that I loved it, but it really is that place is just a special place for me. So I did learn a lot about myself and that it actually could be home.
That's awesome. So second to last kind of question I've got here. So you obviously interacted with some different groups and whatnot. You did some time with the Compassionate Entrepreneurs Club. You also asked some advice of BYU professor Aaron Miller. So what's kind of the most valuable piece of advice you received, and how did that influence your approach?
Probably the very first advice that I got from Aaron Miller when I was first, like, I thought about this, I'd talked to people about this, but I hadn't asked anyone, like I hadn't asked for advice. And the first thing he said was, it wasn't the first thing, but but the first interview that I had, he said, you know, make it small. He's like, you might think one country is small enough. It's not. You might think one city is small enough. It's not. Pick a community. Pick one little community and start from there. And that hugely shaped my time there and my explorations there. That was such a good piece of advice to helping me not get overwhelmed. And I do have people in place to replicate, like I said, like we are ready if we need to make it bigger, but we aren't set on that. We have other things that we can do if we aren't replicating. So
yeah, you're willing to start small.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And feeling very comfortable with that instead of being like, well, this is a drop in the bucket. Yeah. I wanted to start a business. I want to employ people, but
yeah,
you know, but, and hopefully we will get there. Oh, actually, before we end, I do have a success story actually so far.
All right, let's hear it.
Because when I went, and I just found out this week, so I'm actually super excited. So when I went there, I'm pretty sure I explained this. The car I was driving was one where instead of paying the money I was going to pay to rent a car, I gave that money plus a little bit extra to my friend. Yeah, I had an interview with him, I think, in the second episode. And then he paid his money that saved up to buy a car. And so we bought that car, and I was using it for a while I was there, and then I gave it to him afterward.
Yeah.
But he has successfully become a driver. So actually, so it used to be while I was on a mission that all the zone leaders were drivers, but they took away the trucks from the mission in an attempt to make Uganda more like the Kenya and the other missions around there. They didn't have it, so they were trying to make it uniform. And so then they were looking for a driver to kind of supply that need, to be the ones to bring, you know, the propane when it runs out, because missionaries have gas stoves, to bring the materials they need for proselyting, to bring the water when their water runs out. So yeah, they needed someone to be able to run those errands, but they weren't making the missionaries do it anymore. Yeah. And that's where Oma steps in, because he has a car now. He's ready to be a driver. And actually, no one else in the area had one. So if he wasn't there, they would have had to... they probably could have found someone. But because he was there, it made it really easy for them. Even he brings them to the groups that are far away and that are running like in the bush, in the villages, right? He brings them there. And so the timing of it was almost divine, right?
Yeah.
Where, in fact, I would say it was absolutely divine. Where it cost a lot more than I expected with all the repairs that we had to do on it.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a budget for a nicer car. And he is still working towards getting a bigger one that fits more people. But in the meantime, it is being used as a business. He is receiving a living wage off of this. And so already we have one person who's employed, and it's not only helping him, but it's helping the community.
That's awesome.
And this is the same one whose goal is to use this to get a bigger vehicle, to get other business. And his end goal is to build a new school and a new hospital in his village. Because right now they have to travel to the town. And he wants to make people more educated and healthier in his village. And
that's so awesome.
That this is working is a huge first step toward something totally grand. And so I'm excited to see where that journey goes.
That's awesome.
But, yeah.
Okay. So, right, looking towards the future. What is the future of your, I guess we could call it the Uplift Uganda Project, right? What does the future look like? When are you thinking you might go back? What's the future look like for this?
For sure. So in the meantime, like the short-term ones I talked about, I will be doing just by proxy. You know, I have my people I trust, that I've taught them things, and we'll communicate, we'll be in touch, but I won't be there on the ground for these short ones. The long-term, the big ones, I do need to be there on the ground. And so here, my current idea, which is not set in stone, but is a valid and viable idea, is that I currently work in construction, and I work with a company that does stone cladding on a lot of temples and other like government buildings. So the fancy stone on buildings and temples for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now there is a temple announced in Uganda that will be built probably 27, 28. Don't actually know for sure, but if you look at like the usual timeline of something getting announced being built, it does look around 27, 28, if there aren't any hiccups, which you never know.
Right.
But if I could work with my job on that temple, that would be them providing me a place to stay, them providing for me to be there, and I'd have a job while I was there, which would be three huge things that would get me there and get me sustainable there. And then I could take that time while I was there to start my long-term business in the evenings and the weekends when I wasn't working. So that's my current thoughts on how I can bring this into fruition.
Yeah.
It might change, you know, still not set in stone, still don't even know a timeline, it's not a groundbreaking date. Like, who knows? But when I think about what could happen, that is the current, the path that could, yeah, it could definitely happen. If not that, we'll have to figure something out. But so we're looking at 27 to go back and start on the ground business, if at all possible.
Awesome. Well, it's been an incredible journey, like listening as you've just really dived in and loved the problem. So is there any final thoughts or anything you want to share?
Well, I think another big thing I learned from observation is that one of the first steps to self-reliance is gratitude. Those who are grateful for what they have, it's easier to become and stay self-reliant. Those who are ungrateful or always want more generally are not, they're willing to get in debt just to be like the neighbor or to get something more comfortable, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess I say, if you're listening to this, you know, just first of all, be grateful for what you have. You don't need to be like anyone else. You don't, as like, life is hard. I'm also going through some financial strains with school coming up, finding a new apartment, finding money for school, been gone on this trip. There's a lot of things that are stressful too, but I think the first step to any of that is first gratitude. And then once we're grateful, then we can take action on expanding what we have. But I think gratitude needs to come first. And that's what I've seen in personal and anecdotal, just anecdotes. It's not data. I'm not a professor speaking on this. But what I've seen is gratitude helps you be self-reliant. And that, I think, is something that all of us can take no matter what we're in, no matter what. We all want more. We all want to do something more or be something more or have something more. But if we take it down to have gratitude first, that can help us stay, like, not fall and lose what we have already. So I guess that'd be something to share.
Awesome.
This has been Uplift Uganda. Thank you all for joining us on this journey. And until next time, this has been Trevor Dykes with Kenny Mears. Uplift Uganda is a production of Food for Thought Audio. This episode was produced and edited by Kenny Mears and hosted by me, Trevor Dykes. Be sure to subscribe, like, and follow on Facebook, Instagram, or wherever you watch podcasts. And until next time, thanks for listening.